Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Phil, and thank you, ICID Board, for inviting me to come and speak here today. I have to state the obvious right off the bat. I am not Sierra Leonean, and I'm not Mende, and I'm not Karanko, and I'm not even Creole, although these were folks that hailed basically through Halifax on their way to create Freetown in Sierra Leone. However, I do have a perspective, and I'm happy to share that with you. Although I have to admit that the thing that has moved me most at this conference has been the statements by victims. And what is more powerful than the voices of people who are really and truly impacted? And that has really, really touched me. Basically, how did we get involved? I'm the executive director of Cause Canada. And we started work in Sierra Leone in 1988, and we just got going on kind of your more regular international development programming when all of a sudden the war hit in 1990-1991. And this was an amazing experience for us because the people that we knew were then very affected. We had about 150 staff on the ground, and their families were touched, and we were just drawn into that struggle. And to begin with, what we found, what we could do, it wasn't much we could do to undo what was happening, but we could get people's stories. So we actually would visit the hospitals and speak to people who were bilateral amputees, people who had been raped, and people who had been burned badly. And we could get their stories. And they were so wanting to tell us these stories. They just thought somehow we were adding meaning to their trauma if they could just get the word out. So we promised to take these stories back to Canada. But unfortunately, it was a very frustrating period, because no one seemed to care, really, until really one day a Sierra Leonean wedding photographer, he went on later to become an amazing movie producer, but Soria Samura managed to smuggle out of Freetown some footage of what was actually happening on the ground. And it was so horrific, the movie was called Cry Freetown, that all of a sudden really caught the world's attention. I'm going to hope I'm going to do this right. Okay, just a minute. Aha, okay. So basically, the background of the war, it was about a decade long. I put 1999 because that was when the first Lomé agreement, the Lomé Accord, was reached. But there was hostilities after that time. The civil war took over 75,000 lives, and 500,000 Sierra Leoneans became refugees in neighboring countries. And all those countries are so poor that that really just added to the burden in West Africa. Half of the country's population was displaced. And this was just a horrific time. But finally, in July 1999, the accord came at Lomé. And basically, there were three results of that accord. The first was a DDR program that began in 1999, had a few stops and starts as violence continued on until finally in 2002 the war was declared over. Then the special court was legislated, and finally the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was passed into legislation in February 2002. I'm going to just say a couple words about DDR. Basically, their mandate, as in many countries post-war, was to collect, register, disable, and destroy all conventional weapons and munitions, to demobilize all ex-combatants, and to prepare and support these ex-combatants for reintegration into their communities. Basically, the DDR had quite a number of accomplishments, and in fact, many countries actually came to Sierra Leone to see how they'd done it so well. Over 75,000 combatants were disarmed, including 6,800 or more child soldiers, 506 girls, over 4,000 women. 55,000 of these ex-fighters received benefits, things like skills training, formal education, business support. In fact, 12,000 ex-combatants were placed in schools, colleges, universities, all their tuition paid, and they were given living allowances for 1 to 3 years. So there was actually a big push on this. So a lot of good things were done, but when you look at DDR, the R was the hard part. So reintegration was actually incomplete. Jobs were created, and people were trained, but these jobs were not necessarily sustainable. And so even to this day, there's an awful lot of youth unemployment. Victims were not adequately compensated, so there became an imbalance in between the benefits that were given to the ex-combatants and their very victims. Now, the conversation became quite complex because this was one of, I don't know if it was the first, but it was certainly one of the big conflicts in which the use of child soldiers became a very commonplace. And so the child soldiers were both victims and they were also perpetrators. But I remember when we first started, we got involved to Cause Canada in the DDR, and very much so with the reintegration program. And I remember at the beginning, even our own staff said, we have to work with child soldiers. I mean, they felt they were irredeemable. I mean, the whole society kind of thought just, you know, kill them, bury them in the swamp. I mean, that was kind of the way they felt about that. There was no way to rehabilitate these people. And there was much more sympathy for the victims. However, it was interesting. Internationally, there was a big push on child soldiers. And so it was easier to get funding, in fact, to help retrain and reintegrate child soldiers than their very victims. So this became a kind of a tricky situation. And the other real problem with DDR was that women and girls were really not equal beneficiaries. And we found that in our own programs. We went to the Canadian Peacebuilding group, and we got money for child soldiers and also for amputees, for helping both sides of this equation. We found out by the end of a year and a half that only 17% of the people we helped were women. And then we thought, well, why is that? What happened here? And what happened really is in the DDR process, any young man that would hand over his automatic weapon would get $500 and then all these benefits and schooling and this and that and the other and a retraining program. But often the young girls who had been abducted as bush wives, they didn't have any weapons, right? So they were stuck in a situation where they didn't get any benefits and they couldn't even go home. That was the sad part. If they wanted to go home, their villages would say, okay, we'll accept you back, but not your rebel babies. So they got stuck where they couldn't even go home with their children. So that was the next round of the funding that we used, was to try to help those women and girls affected by war. The next thing was the special court. And here the focus was on criminal prosecution of a very narrow group of people. And one of the things I just wanted to say, on DDR, they got basically $36.5 million to do that. Then the special court, they got about $250 million to do this. In the end, 12 people were indicted. 4 RUF were indicted, including Fode Sanko, who died in custody. 3 SLA were indicted, including Johnny Paul Koroma, who nobody knows where he is, actually, at the moment. He's still a fugitive. 4 Kamajors were indicted, including a man named Norman, who died in custody. But that was really controversial, because a lot of people saw him, actually, as a hero who had been defending the rights of the people in his area. And finally, Charles Taylor was taken to The Hague for security reasons, and he has also been indicted. What was interesting in the special court is that everything was wired so they had live satellite between The Hague and Sierra Leone. So there were some positive impacts with this, records management, maybe increased standards and capacity building for Sierra Leone lawyers, and perhaps it does set a precedent that future leaders of conflict see that there is some type of justice, but that was the special court. Then the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, basically its goals were to have an impartial record of violations and abuses of human rights, to address impunity, to respond to victims' needs, to promote healing and reconciliation, and to prevent a repetition of violations and abuses suffered, never again. And this was a broader mandate than South Africa. And I think I'm going to be able to convince you it was a little too broad. They bit off a little more than they could chew. However, I also have to say that whereas I've told you 36.5 million for DDR, 200 million at least for special courts, a measly 5 million, and it took a long time for them to even get that $5 million for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Now, they went into every corner of the country to do this, and it was done actually quite well. They collected statements by perpetrators and victims alike. They tried to understand and record specifically how people suffered and to make amends. And there were closed and open hearings, and the closed hearings were often for those who had been raped or for children. Normally, they really respected their privacy. But I like this story. I was just recently in Sierra Leone about 10 days ago, and I was meeting with a young fellow who had worked in the special court, and he said, you know, there was a story of a man named Bass Marine, and he was a teacher who had been abducted by the RUF and then who became the pastor of the RUF. And he became their spiritual leader. And I learned a few things. Like, for instance, Muslims, RUF people, did not actually attack anyone on Fridays. And Christian RUF people did not attack on Sundays. And they prayed before they did their awful, horrendous attacks, and even sacrificed animals beforehand. Anyway, this man, Bass Marine, when it came his time, he insisted on an open hearing. He lay, I love Africa because you're so dramatic. They lay flat on the floor. He had around him, he had an imam, he had a pastor, he had some chiefs. They poured libation on him, and he basically asked for forgiveness. He said, if I don't do this, my heart will not be good. I want forgiveness. So anyway, there was these kind of dramatic things that were happening. Generally speaking, the TRC is seen as successful, however, not strong enough. And basically, people think that there should have been more emphasis on reconciliation and amends. Three quarters of the Sierra Leone population would know that what TRC was, or knew the name of it, but not many really understood, you know, what it was for or what what was happening about it. And as I mentioned, one of the mandates was to respond to victims' needs. Well, this is a little too much when you only got $5 million, really. And so they didn't do a particularly good job of that, because how could they? However, NGOs filled the gap. And this is when we get into that whole discussion about restorative justice. And I know when we went in, you would sit down with the victims and we'd say, what can we do for you? And they'd say, I want my hands back. I want my village back. I want my home back. I want to be able to make a living for my family. They wanted restorative justice. They wanted some practical things that really the TRC could not offer, and which others did, you know, try to offer, a lot of international NGOs. The TRC had a wonderful impact, I think, on children. I think particularly it was good with children. They were guided by the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and they tried to put the best interests of the child as a primary consideration. They had equal treatment of all children before the TRC, whether you were a perpetrator or whether you were a victim or whether you were a witness. And they tried to give privacy, you know, to make privacy paramount. And so that there were closed sessions. There was usually a social worker who knew the child, or else a family member that would come with them to the TRC. Special attention was given to girls, and efforts were made to address gender-based violence. It was decided that children under 18 would not be prosecuted under the law. So what were the recommendations of the TRC? Because this is where I think really the TRC shone, because they made some amazing recommendations, and there were some follow-up, which I'll get to. For children, they recommended the end of recruitment and participation of children in armed forces. They addressed the needs of war-affected children, education, health care, elimination of child labor. They emphasized that we should increase the rule of law institutions to support the protection of children. They addressed issues affecting the girl child, such as early marriage. They said how important it was to build a culture of respect for human rights, peace, and democracy through education. And I think this was very, very important. And the photo that I have here is of one of our programs. These are all child soldiers. You'll see how young these little guys were. But we did have a whole emphasis, and it wasn't just us. There was a lot of NGOs and the country in general putting pressure on people to build a culture of peace through the schools, through education, and this kind of thing. But in this particular program, we worked with child soldiers, and we did what's called peace theater, which basically was role-playing, trying to figure out what were some of the hurdles that they were going to encounter when they went back to villages where they had raped and pillaged and done horrible things. And we tried to prepare them for how to do this. So, and it was also human rights, just trying to push the culture of peace. Then another mandate for the TRC was healing and reconciliation. Again, maybe a little broad, maybe just a little idealistic, because they didn't have the time or the resources to do that. But while the TRC was promoting perhaps healing and reconciliation by facilitating people's storytelling, which is a way of doing that, NGOs came from all over the world to help amputees in particular heal and recover their dignity. So here's a picture of the amputee soccer team. And this group actually went to the World's Championship, and first of all in Britain and later in Rio de Janeiro. And it started in the amputee camp, and we were one of the first ones to start this group. Then it was carried on by others after us, and they got these folks all the way to Rio de Janeiro. And it was such a healing thing for these amputees, for these young men to be able to get out and play again when they had really been so, so traumatized. So what are some of the concrete results of the TRC? First of all, I would say that there were a few things. Right after the recommendations of the TRC, there was a white paper that was written by the government, and they said, we agree with this, we'll do it. We agree with this, we'll do it. Oh, forget that one. You know, we're independent, we'll do our own thing. But there were some things that they really followed up well. The Human Rights Commission of Sierra Leone was established by Act of Parliament in 2004, I would say is a fairly much a direct result of the TRC. Its vision, a Sierra Leone where a culture of human rights prevails and the people respect the rule of law and live in peace and dignity. The TRC also recommended that a national youth commission be set up. And this was actually done. It took a few years, and the youth were so excited. I was kind of involved with this to some extent. And the youth were just so thrilled. It was like a promise kept that they would have their own youth commission. And the idea was to increase the productive capacity of youth and enhance their participation in development and also in governance, because that had been one of the key things in the war. And then Sierra Leone also established the National Child Rights Bill, based largely on the Convention of the Rights of the Child. And the TRC recommended free and compulsory education for all children. And I've seen this with my own eyes. Like, it started off right after the war, the schools had all been burned down. Kids, if they were going to school, were often in rural areas underneath a tree with the most educated remaining person in the village trying to teach them. But over the last decade, schools have been built, and we went from only the guys going, and then finally now there's actually more women in primary school, more girls in primary school than boys. And then now there's just, we've got everyone in school, and the quality of education is a little bit suspect because there's too much crowding. So anyway, this has been an amazing thing. The TRC also had a great deal to say about the treatment of women and made a lot of recommendations about women's rights, discrimination, land ownership, inheritance, and this kind of thing. And then eventually, Sierra Leone did, in December 2003, sign on to the Maputo Protocol, which aimed at social and political equality for women, control of reproductive health, and the end of FGM, female genital mutilation, but this has not yet been ratified. So the only thing I'm going to say about some of these things that look so good, is that it doesn't mean it all trickles down to the villages. It's a pretty good start. So finally, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the concrete results of the TRC as far as measuring its effect on democratic governance. And first of all, I think they have really put an impact or put an emphasis on human rights, child's rights, women's rights. And they basically emphasize the need for education on peace building and also governance. And I think there's a lot of programs now in the schools actually trying to teach children the importance of democracy. So they even have child governments, and where there's a minister of agriculture and a minister of health and a minister of infrastructure, this kind of thing. So they really are trying hard. And they underlined the importance of the rule of law and institutions to support the protection of child rights. Finally, I just wanted to show you a couple of pictures, oops, I better do this, of my favorite place in Freetown. It's not a great city anymore, way too much traffic and everything else, but they have this great outdoor war museum, and I'm sorry about the quality of the pictures, but anyway, it tells the story of the war and also of the peace. And it's wonderful. But one of the things that I like most in that whole display, the outdoor museum, is this one thing that's up on the wall, and it says, "We lost our homes, we lost our hands, we lost our limbs, we lost our loved ones. We almost lost this land, never, never again. Whatever parts of us that function will be used with vigor to prevent history repeating itself. Higher heights shall we raise our beloved country, Sierra Leone." And I love, there was a big poster shortly after the war. It said, "War done, done. We want peace." And I think that basically that's still where the country is today. Thank you. Thank you.